Hello, everyone. This is Tony Broom from Henderson, North Carolina. So good to be with you again today. This is recorded on Saturday, May the 27th. A little bit of breeze on the outside, and we have mostly sunny skies here. Nice, warm temperatures today. I'm still on the front porch with my coffee cup. It's a little bit too hot for coffee right now, almost. But I guess those who are of us who are avid coffee drinkers really don't mind hot temperatures a little bit. Anyway, I just wanted to drop in and kind of let you know a little bit about my career. Everybody's having their career podcasts on here, and I wanted to let you know a little bit about what's happening with my career and how I got into what I'm doing. Of course, a lot of what I am doing was really not my choice, even though I do have a choice. But I've always felt a call for gospel ministry in my life from an early age, age of a teenager, about 14 years of age. Ever since then, I've been involved in some kind of gospel ministry, music, preaching, teaching, nursing home, senior, civic outreach, in some kind of way, and even involving Christian radio from early years of the 70s, which we had a church program in the early 70s that they started a local broadcast, and a 15-minute broadcast on the station of the town that I lived in, and they started the program, and then we had a singing group there, and the ones that started the program didn't really have the time or what it took, I guess, to keep on into the doing the thing every week. You have to do something on it every week, of course, to keep the thing fresh and not rerun and stuff. So our singing group took it over, and we kept it for several years until the church went through a remodeling program and felt like they needed the finances there more than putting it into the radio program. And by that time, I had started getting the radio fever. It really got in my blood, and I just didn't want to give it up. So I took a broadcast for myself and got a local sponsor, which is the local Burger King in the town that we lived in. The franchise guy there, the franchise owner of the Burger King, was a Christian, and he really wanted to help get the gospel out. So I started a broadcast there called the Firing Line Broadcast, and we used the old Southern gospel song, the old hymn, "Keep on the Firing Line." If you're in the battle for the Lord in the right, keep on the firing line. And that was a nice program, and I had several renditions of it that I did, not that I did necessarily. I did have one that I kind of done a mix on, doing a string guitar for like rhythm, and then went back and put in the a banjo, five-string banjo, or banjer, we called them. You really played Southern and bluegrass, a gospel banjer. And my sisters called the music store one time and said, "Do you have a banjo?" And the fellow said, "What? You know, a banjo, the thing that they got on the..." He said, "Oh, you're talking about a banjer. Yeah, we got a banjer." Oh, yeah, that was fun. It was my first one. Old Harmony banjer was my first one. I guess I could say banjo to be correct. But anyway, that was my first one. And I got it around the time when the Dueling Banjos record was out. Dueling Banjo record was out, and it was hard to get a hold of one because everybody and their first cousin and their uncle thought they wanted one. And they'd get them and find out that it was hard to make the five-finger roll. You couldn't get your fingers to do what, like, Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs and all them did, and so they ended up putting them under a bed somewhere or giving them to the kid to play with. But anyway, I did persevere and learn and enjoyed learning that. I guess my first musical instrument, this is not in any order, by the way. I'm just kind of rambling along. I'm not sure if that's good or not, but I've heard Larry and them do it, and they seem to really like it and get a lot of success with it, so I thought I'd do it. But anyway, I better not do everything he does, had I asked Jake about that one. I took that part and put it with the other, and had actually, which they couldn't appreciate it on the AM station, but I actually had the banjo coming in the right channel and the guitar in the left, which didn't really do all that well because everything I had was automatic record level, and it kind of faded and splattered and did everything else on top of each other. I made some recordings in those days, homemade stuff that I still have, and not really that good, but anyway, I enjoyed doing it, messing around with it. My room as a teenager, I would mess with tapes and stuff and do some singing and go back and put other stuff with it. And later I learned it was called overdubbing. And went back and did that. Enjoyed doing that too. But I would take the and I got a rendition of "Keep on the Firing Line" from I think it was the Boston Pops. I think it was one of the orchestra, and they had a then there was a brass T.O. Brass or something that was a version of it. I had several versions. I would use different ones, you know, and I would start the intro of the music, and then I would fade that down and introduce the broadcast, of course. And we had, like I said, we had a sponsor in those days, which was the local Burger King, and they had a couple spots they would run. Now, they didn't want to run, you know, way into the broadcast, so what we decided to do was basically have, you know, me come on and do the introduction and kind of get the thing going, and then we would have a spot at the close to the top of the broadcast. And they would do 30-second spots. And then I would come back and do the main, you know, the body of the broadcast, any more music and any message that I had. And then near the end, a couple or 3 minutes to go, we would stop for another spot on the end. And then after the spot, I would come back and say any final closing comments and close the broadcast out with the exit from Keep on the Firing Line. And my scripture verse that I used for that broadcast was Luke 12:49, which says, "I am come to send fire on the earth, and what will I if it be already kindled?" So that was a neat way to kind of authenticate the broadcast, if you will. Enjoyed doing that for a long time. That was probably 10, 12 years or more, something like that. Even after I moved to Henderson, North Carolina, where I live now, we moved up here in 86, and actually kept the broadcast going for a couple more years. And then when that broadcast played out, I finally was already involved in Christian radio, working locally for the Christian radio station, which is part of the Bible Broadcasting Network. I worked there for several years. Some of you have heard BBN all over the world. You could, of course, get the web streaming now, bbnradio.org, and you can listen several languages and all over the world. But anyway, I enjoyed doing that. Learned how to do weather and local spots. Was my good buddy Don League was kind of a predecessor before me. He was in the same station in the early to mid 80s, I think, and was there a little bit before I came. Well, it's there several years before I came. A couple years before I came, there was a guy or two between him and me, and then I started in June of 86. Worked part time for a while. And have the same problems I do now. It's this time of the year, real twangy. The N's and the R's just don't want to do right. But the radio station was nice. It was, of course, as it is now, part of the satellite network. And it was, of course, then we had some local stuff. But everything is all satellite now. There's nothing local for the announcer to do. But we had some local production. I enjoyed, you know, seeing how smoothly I could get the church announcements and the weather reports, weathercasts, to go out of the satellite and come back in without being too much of a plonk or blop or whatever. So anyway, that was an art to get to be able to do that. We had 30-second spots that would break away from satellite. And the trick was to get it to do as smoothly as possible, and so that you would not really know. I mean, of course, you would know the person listening to the voice would maybe know you and know who it was, but just anybody listening to the station would just, you know, it would just be smooth as possible, and you wouldn't really care or worry about it one way or the other whether it was local or satellite. We had it was a PR program. It was a community relations program that we did in those days, and it was about 20 or 25 minute interview that we did with several people within the community, or various and sundry people in the community. A community affairs program, that's the word I'm looking for, that we had in those days. And I enjoyed doing that with the program. it was called Insight, and we did that for a while. It was a real good show that would allow that was always on Tuesday afternoon was when we played it locally. We always recorded it ahead of time, usually, and then we would play that locally from the between 2 and 2:30 spot in the afternoon. And that has since been taken away, and now headquarters takes care of all that. I continued working for the station, worked several years full-time, and till 1990, and then, or 91. And then after several years being away, I was used again in a kind of a part-time way. I had, the sharp time talking, and what was the Panasonic? I still had the Panasonic that, had the timer and the stopwatch. That was a valuable source. They don't make that anymore. Seemed like everything that blind people uses that really do them good, they stopped making it for some reason or another. But that thing ran off of 3 AA batteries and would last forever, seemed like, and still does. It's getting old now, but anyway, it still works, and I handle it with tender love and care, and don't use the stopwatch that much anymore, but it's still there if I need it. The stopwatch, that would be used to time things mainly after you record it. You go back and you do your spot. When you need something to actually look at time elapsing, live stuff, I had a Braille stopwatch, and still have that too, by the way. It has a big face on it, and you just, click, click, and it goes to the 12 o'clock position, which is a starting position. And it clicks real loud. And the way that I got around the click was I would start the stopwatch. How you like that for a tongue twister? Start the stopwatch and the cart machine at the same time. And so that would get, you wouldn't get the click, but you would get the time started. It's kind of syncing at the same time. But I'd start the cart machine and the stopwatch at the same time. And then as I would do my announcement, even if I would read the announcement in Braille and I would make shortcut cards, or I wouldn't call them cue cards, I'd just call them announce cards, whatever I'd make up, and would read those in had shortcut forms for weather, L for fair and PC for partly cloudy. I learned all that mess instead of writing everything out. It takes paper and all this stuff. I got these 3x5 index cards. You'd use those to put your weathercast on in the morning or in the evening and do it again. And use those to put your announcements, your church announcements. Had a folder. The secretary made me a folder. And we put all these cards in the folder. And, of course, you could just zip them in and out as you need to. And it was a good little filing system that I had. Not pro-looking, but it worked for me anyway. And I enjoyed using it when I needed to. So that worked. And then as you got used to doing it, you could kind of tell when 30 seconds was getting close. You'd take your hand off the Braille card and put it down to the 6 o'clock position, which is your 30-second position for the stopwatch. And then when the hand would, you could feel the hand coming down in your finger, and you could know, hey, boy, it's time to get out of here and exit your announcement. And, of course, you'd mess up sometime. That's part of the game. And then if you could get used to doing it and know that right there you're getting on that 29 or 30-second position that you would just wrap up, then you would go back and take that recording and take your Panasonic with the stopwatch on it, with the, which, of course, was voice. And you'd take that thing and time it out, and you could get any, you could see if it was like 29.5 seconds or 29.9. You'd know 29.9 is a little bit too tight. I like 29.5. I could live with 29.8 or 7, but I kind of liked, you don't want it so tight that it just jams in between what was going on or what before, what's coming up next. You want a second or so. You want a half a second or some little lead time there that you can, it sounds like someone's taking a breath or just doing something natural, and you don't hear anything on the air except one thing changing to another. In the studio, of course, you can hear click, 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 because it changed in, from the satellite. You could hear the switcher saying click, click. Then the spot would play, and then when the spot got through playing, you would hear click, click, and it would go back to satellite. And, of course, you got used to knowing kind of what they were doing and what they were going to do and how the spots were going to go in and out, and you could get used to doing that. I had fun doing it, And me and my buddy Don, who Don's not on the list now, but he's a cool cat. He's a good fellow. Just had a hip accident this past fall and was really having some hard times with that, and still does sometimes. But he's a whole lot better now, of course. We thank the Lord for that. And Don is an inspiration to a lot of people. We used to compare radio stuff, you know, how we did this and that. I would tell him how I did something, and he would tell me how he did something. And it's really, you know, helps each other out a lot if you do that. And not saying that you need to do everything the same way all the time. Sometimes you have your thing that you need to do, and he might have his thing that he needs to do a little bit differently. But anyway, the meter reading in those days was a trick. He had a system that was made for him by an engineer that was kind of a beep, a tone system that he would punch punch the buttons on the keypad until he got the corresponding tone. And they had the old Mosley read system then, and that's the old, you know, the Mosley system they used to take meter readings and sighted people just look on the meter on the rack there. But he would get the meter readings that way, and then they put in the Gettner system, which allowed you to take meter readings from a voice activated over the telephone line. And of course, you could control the telephone with that. Could control the transmitter with that over the telephone line. And so we enjoyed that. We used to kid people and say, well, you know, you guys, you sighted guys now are on the same boat that we're in. You have to do things the same way we do. So that was kind of a nifty thing. We enjoyed doing that. And you know, you could call the transmitter, check on the meter readings, and so we could do that. And then the transmitter, of course, would go down, and our transmitter went down about as much as it stayed up in those days. We had a beeper, a pager in those days. It would call the pager and give a voice, tell us it was down or what something was wrong, and we'd have to go to find a telephone and call in to get it back on or whatever. And then they came, of course, with the old trusty cell phone. Everybody almost has a cell phone now. And they came with a cell phone, and so we, you know, got us a cell phone on the stations. And then, of course, when the transmitter had trouble, it would just call the cell phone, and we could just take care of it right over the cell phone. And that was so much more convenient rather than having to look for somebody's phone or go find a phone somewhere or whatever, have somebody take you where a telephone is. And that does away with your independence, right? If you're blind and you have a cell phone, it belonged to the station. If it called you, you could just control the thing right over the cell phone. And that was cool. A lot of stations do that now. They have the Gettner, some people call it Gettner, Gettner system. Of course, if the problem dealt with engineering, it was something out of our control, and we would have to call the engineer, and he would take care of it. And that was good, too. If something that you cannot do and not expect to do because of sight, then you could just have somebody else do it that was supposed to be doing it. That's the way it all supposed to do, you know. Like the doctor's office, you know, the nurse does what she's supposed to do. And she gets her part of the tea, and the doctor does his part, and he gets his piece of the pie, which is a big piece a lot of times. And then, you know, little CA, what's they call it, NCA comes in there, nursing assistant, certified CNA comes in there. And she takes your blood pressure, and they give her a little bit too, you know. So everybody gets their little piece of the pie. Anyway, so that happened on up until about 2000 and what, 2 or 3 maybe. It was anyway. It finally that played out now. And then I've had several positions in ministry as far as assistant pastor. First assistant pastor, his job was in 1985. Which lasted for about a year, till I moved up here to Henderson in 86. I am originally from the Fort Mill, Rock Hill area of South Carolina. That's the first church that had the gospel, the ministry position in, and did everything from organist, playing piano, working with visitation, Sunday school teaching, and was first licensed as a minister in 1974. Of course, then in the late, middle 90s, 97, 98, I joined the Pentecostal Holiness Ministry, was licensed as a Pentecostal minister in 1999 and ordained in 2001. had a position at church, Notch Grove Church, which is near Oxford, North Carolina, as pastor for about 3 years. And now I am at South Henderson Pentecostal Holiness Church, which is a church that we joined in 1998. I have several positions there. The Lord has really blessed. I'm currently pastor of Senior Ministries, and have had that position for several years now. And what we do mainly is have a Wednesday morning service, and this gives an alternative for people who are disabled, people who are seniors, people who cannot get out at night and attend evening and family functions at church. And they have this service for them that is designed especially for them. Of course, anybody can come. That on Wednesday morning, we meet at 10 o'clock in the morning, and we have praise and worship, and we sing the old hymns too, and we have a preaching old-fashioned message from yours truly. And maybe I can let you hear a spot of that one time. Ask Larry about that. I'm sure it won't be a problem if we're not getting religious. It doesn't have a thing to do with religion. If you have a personal relationship with the one who made you, that doesn't have a thing in the world to do with religion. I can't even say the word. You know how that is. I know I don't have much to do with it if I can't even say it. But anyway, we have lunch afterwards, which is a complimentary lunch. We do take a free will offering during the service, but lunch doesn't cost the people anything. And once a month, we have covered dish. We actually let the folks cook and bring over whatever they want to bring over, and we just all get together and eat it afterwards, you know. And, of course, one of the groups of people that is sometimes overlooked, and not meaningly, churches don't mean to, but they get overlooked in some of our contemporary churches nowadays, is the disabled and senior group. And so I'm committed because I don't guess you would say I'm handicapped, but I'm in that class, and I'm blind. I was born premature and got the old oxygen problem that a lot of you have. It got too much oxygen to the eyes. The old RLF, retinal fibroplasia, which is now classified under premature retinopathy. And so that's the old condition, leaving the guy in light perception, maybe a few objects up close. And I'm thankful to have that, but I've never seen well enough to do print. I have ridden bicycles and stuff with a place where we grew up and all that, but I can, of course, look up and see the top of the porch and tell there's something up there, and I can tell, you know, the sun is shining and stuff like that, see the lights on in the room. But, you know, there was a plan, of course, to destroy my life, I'm sure, but there was another plan that was a higher power and a higher creator that had a plan for my life. And, you know, I've enjoyed success, I guess you would call it. I don't have a bunch of money, and I don't make a bunch of money, but I do thank the Lord for what I have. I'm thankful for what I have. I've looked in other places for employment, even though being involved in ministry, a lot of years where I really was like volunteer, didn't really make anything. And I, even though you're a blind person, a man or a woman, you still feel responsible for taking and helping and taking care of your household. And that's something that a good person, a good conscientious person always feels. It doesn't matter whether you're blind or crippled or whatever. You still feel that responsibility to help help to take care of your house. So I've felt that, you know, I should really do my part and do what I can, not just to be a burden to society or take off of people all the time. There's nothing wrong with taking what comes your way if it's given to you, and you know, but you want to help give something back too. And a lot of you are in that position. I know I can just tell it on the list and tell it by the podcast and stuff. But I tried several. You know, I took the transcription course from Hadley. We talked about that, which is no longer available, unfortunately. But it was a good course. I took both of them, all that they had. And I looked for work in that field. And really, there was not a lot of success from blind people being employed in that field. And they really like females too, which that kind of left me out. So they didn't really want to come out and say that, but you find it out later when after you done took all the classes and try to look for employment. There are some men that do transcribing, but they're few and far between. And so I delved into that area and enjoyed learning the compound words and the medical words and stuff like that. Hadley's course was not really up to date because so many of the drug terms and the new medicines that come out all the time that you just can't keep up with. So you just learn your basic medical terminology, but a lot of the meds and stuff like that you don't really get the knowledge of. And, of course, we use a file card system for those words in those days, and that was just too much really to keep up with. I guess you could do it with PC now, and you have all your tools and study, and it was kind of, a lot of us didn't even have computers then, so we could really do some different stuff about that now. I hold an auctioneer license in North and South Carolina, even though I don't do much selling now. I've done some auctions in the 70s and 80s. Well, I didn't do auctions in the 70s. I attended auctions in the 70s. I didn't do any because I wasn't licensed. And you can't do auctions unless you're licensed. You know, I was licensed in 1981. $25 now, 30 wheel bid, 35 now, 40 bid, $40 bid, 40 wheel ago, 40 sale, 40 now, 50 bid, 48, 50, 75, 100, 100 hit, 100 now, 10, 25 now, 35 now, 40 bid, 40 now, 50, 75 now, 200 sold right there. And so, you know, we had fun doing the bid calling and stuff. How in the world does a blind auctioneer do auctions? Well, you have people that do your ring work, men and women who do your ring work. They take the items up, hold them up. People can see them, and, you know, they can describe the item or help you describe it, tell you or you can tell the people. And we train the people who do our ring work to take the bids for us, to help us catch the bids. And, you know, there are problems. You know, you miss people bidding. And, but they can't get but so mad at a blind person, right? Ah, yeah, bet your life on it. Now you start messing with a man's money or a man's woman, you know, you're in trouble. Well, as a matter of fact, he'd probably let you have his woman before he would his money. But, no, you don't mess with a man's money too much. They don't feel sorry for you because you're blind. They get kind of sore at you. But, yeah, not too bad. Most time we have a little system that instead of the ring person saying the number, they would say the bid and saying the number, they would say yes or yeah or some kind of colloquialism of that, offshoot of that or whatever, and that would let you know that you know to keep going up. I have 50 now, 75. We'll bid 75. Yep. Now 100. We'll get 100. Yep. Now 225, now whatever it is, you know, and so you just keep on going up like that. It was fun, and still is, but auctioneering, the auction is a profession. Some people have done very, very well with the auctioneer profession, and they're real proud of it. They have a lot of pride in it, and some folks have made a real decent living doing it too. But I've known all along that you know there was a course set in the plan of God in life for my life, and it was ministry related, and I've always been involved in that, and I am thankful for the position that I have now, thankful for the people that I work with, and of course, you know, calling on sick people and calling in the hospitals, and of course sometimes you get people to take you to the hospital to see people or take you to their home. And that not only helps you to see the person in the home, but it helps you to make a bond with the person who's taking you. They just feel like that they are doing something too, you know. Maybe they feel like they can't sing, they can't play the piano, they can't preach, or they can't do this and that, but they can drive a car. And so I say, well, that's important. You know, I can't do that. I cannot drive a car. I can't take myself where I need to go. So you are important too. You can take me and, you know, you can help me to get introduced to this person. You can help me find a seat, or you can help me to talk or to pray with the person. You know, the sighted person might assist you in taking your hand and maybe gently touching the person's hand or to hold the person's hand if they're comfortable with that. So there's a lot of ways that sighted people can still help us. And, of course, we enjoy and we need all the help we can get. All of us do. And so that the auctioneering is really – There have been a lot of things that's happened in years. You know, you've got some jackleg auctioneers that have done things that are not right, and they've had to take disciplinary action out on them. And they, even the charity auctions, you try to help schools and churches, and I've enjoyed helping churches with charity auctions. But they've gotten kind of meticulous about that now, too, because, you know, you have to keep records. And who wants to keep a bunch of records and have to put up with a bunch of mess just to help some poor old soul out who's just trying to make an honest dollar, and a church who's doing a mission or trying to help a young people to get on a mission trip or trying to help underprivileged children or something, that you just want to help people, you know. And you don't want to have to go through all the red tape and all that. So I basically, and forgive me, fellow auctioneers, for saying this, but I basically advise people just to have a yard sale. Just put your items up there and sell them and don't worry about it. You know, you don't have to go through all the hoopla and the red tapes and everything else, or the black tape or white tape or whatever kind of tape it is. But you just have so much you have to go through. There is a law now, for instance, that says that if you have a cake that is donated, and this is somebody who just honestly bakes a cake and donates it. They ain't trying to kill nobody or nothing. They just want to sell a cake to make for a good cause. And you put the cake up there. If you auction the cake, you have to have a label on the cake to tell, like, the ingredients, just like you're reselling in the store, or retailing sale in the store. And it just, you know, it just don't make any sense to me. But there's been some things that like that's going on that I just can't, you know, I just can't deal with. And rather than deal with it, I just enjoy the bid calling and keep my license up. Because if you let your license expire, then you have to go through testing, and it's a whole lot more strenuous now than it was in the 70s and early 80s to get licensed. So I just keep those up every year and trust the good Lord for the money somewhere, and it always comes through somehow. But it's kind of expensive just to keep license up and really not use them that much, but I do, because I don't want to let them elapse and then you can't get them if you really want to or need to have them. And it's an accomplishment that I have in life and that I've done. And I'm proud of that. I'm proud of the fact that I went to Mendenhall School of Auctioneering, High Point, North Carolina, in the early 80s, and I got my license. And a ham operator. I went through the ham operator studies that you do, and extra class ham, AE4XK, Alpha Echo 4 X-ray Kilo, and that's my call sign. I have a website, www.TonyBroome.com. You can go there and you can read more about my ministry and my life, and hope that it's an inspiration to you. I promote access technology. I use Freedom Box. I've used JAWS, Window Eyes. I've helped and trained people on JAWS. JAWS is a wonderful product. Window Eyes is too. HAL's not too bad. And I've used the old ASAW, ASAW. I didn't use ASAP, but I didn't have a computer then, but I used the TinyTalk screen reader for DOS. I've used ASAW for Windows, and that was a good product. A little cumbersome on all the key stuff you had to do, but it was a good product. They, of course, MicroTalk made that, and they discontinued that. It was not now supported under 2000 or XP. Hate to see that happen, but anyway, the Freedom Box, that's what I use now. It's a whole lot less expensive to maintain that, $129 a year, and you'd get software updates free, or no extra charge anyway. I can't say free, but anyway, that's what I use. System access for things offline, Freedom Box browser for most and everything online. Of course, you can use system access through Internet Explorer or Outlook Express if you want to. Microsoft Word. I don't have Word. I use WordPad. Old cheapy WordPad or Notepad. TextPal. I think I'm going to take a look at that. But anyway, I don't want to ramble. I do want to tell you what's going on. And our Wednesday Morning Ministries is really being blessed. We are running an attendance of 70s and 80s now, and I'm so thankful for that. It was maybe 30s or maybe 40 when I first took it, and now it has grown, and I'm glad to see that happen and hope it continues to happen. We have people from the community that come in on Wednesday morning who have other church obligations at other times, and so they can come and join us. When, if we were at the regular set times, then they couldn't be able to, would not be able to be with us, and so they can come and join us and still meet their other obligations at other times. And I'm glad to see that happen too. So, and then there are several nursing homes that I have services in the community and surrounding community. There are like five or six that I do each month. Some I do weekly, others I do monthly. And that keeps me quite busy with the PC help that I try to give people and doing podcasts and things from time to time. I don't have a radio job anymore, but I do podcasts, and I do trying to get into the CD stuff more, making myself some CDs, and perhaps people would like to have the music. And maybe later we'll be able to put some stuff up on the website. It's all text now, because I had to learn the HTML thing by hand, and we do it through Notepad and write my things up. If I have a RTF document that I... what I do with my messages, by the way, let me tell you that before I quit, that I take my messages. What I do is write down the Braille copy for myself, the scriptures and basic outline or whatever, and then I take that and I write an RTF file in WordPad for the people at church where they will have a handout. And I take this RTF file and use a program called Easy Text Converter. Instead of having to write the whole thing out again in HTML, I just use this text program, Easy Text HTML Converter program, and open the file in that, tonysmessage.rtf or whatever the file might be called, and then it opens it in this through this program, and then I issue a command to use this program to convert the program to HTML. It puts the tags in there, and then I use this file, put it on the website so that people can see it if they want to. And so the file has just HTML conversion with no extra. And then what I do is take the file that I've just converted to HTML, go to the bottom of the file, and right before the ending body tag, which those of you who know HTML know what I'm talking about, right before the ending body tag, I put in a couple of links, anchors and things, to have a link to my encouragement page, where all the messages and things are. So I have it where you can return to the encouragement page, and then I have another link at the bottom where you can return to the home page. And I write those in by hand so that people can, not just be stuck there at the bottom. They can have a couple of links to return. And if I want to put in an email link, I can put that in there too. So anyway, that's why we do our website. Code it all with the files that I don't convert on text files. I do all those with Notepad. Just write it out, HTML. I don't know HTML thoroughly, but I know the basics. And I took couple weeks and learned and put my website up. Found me a good host and put my website up there, and I'm very, very thankful for that. I have this RTF file for the message, and I convert one to HTML and put it on the website, and the RTF file that I have still left in RTF format, I take that and send it. Freedom Box has a command that you can attach a file, and I attach the file and send it to one of our other pastors at the church, and he takes it and opens it up in Word and doctors it up a little bit, makes it... the font bigger. I could do that, but I can't see how it looks, and I want somebody to know how it looks. And I send it to either the lady that takes care of our music or one of the pastors at church or somebody, and they take it and they doctor it up, and then they print it out so that people can have the seniors can have a large print format, a large print handout on Wednesday morning. They won't have to be filling with their Bibles and this and that. They can have the same thing that I have, they can have. And so that works out quite well. That's the way I do my job, basically. I have, of course, looking forward to the Olympus recorder, where I can do some stuff on location and can have notes, can take notes and voice notes and stuff and put them in there, and then go back and later and either put it in my notes at Freedom Box or either do something to where I can have access to the names and addresses. I found the old Adrifile program, which is on the JAWS, JFWLite.com website under the programs section. You can use that program to make names and addresses. It works real well. I'm sure it would work with JAWS, WinRise. It works real well with System Access. And you can put your names and addresses in there, name the file, save it. You use your arrow keys to arrow up and down through the entries. And then when you get to the entry that you want, you can use your tab key to tab down, and you can, you know, use your read keys and stuff to read about that person, their address, their phone number, their email, or whatever you happen to have put in there. So that program will work for that. That's the way that I do my names and addresses. I use Freedom Scan. Any ministry lists that we have that are in print, I use Freedom Scan to scan that in, and I can save a document of it. I can use it. I can either save it like that, or either take the names off of that and take the information off of that and put it in the address file, and have it that way. It's a little bit easier to work with in the address file thing because you can just arrow up and down through it. If you save it in a scanned document, you have to just read through the whole thing till you find what you want. And this way, you can just kind of zip through the names and addresses. That, my friends, ladies and gentlemen, is how I do my ministry job and career and how things are going at this time. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk again later. Bye-bye.